Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, I felt really in the flow. It's always a pleasure talking to you and being with you. It's nice to be with somebody that's so insightful, that is out there, that is doing such a fantastic job with her podcast, with her business. It's a real pleasure to be on your show and to be with your community. I feel that the topics I covered are quite important, particularly what's happening with COVID. The more people that can understand that it's our mental attitude that changes our lives, that changes the lives of others, that changes the lives of our community, that even changes the lives of our country and our globe, the better our world will be. And this is vital in this time. So to be given this opportunity to talk about this, I feel is a positive for everyone.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's mentor guest is a second conversation with John Patching. He is in private practice with a company called Intrinsic Self that he founded a number of years ago. If you've been listening since 2019, you might remember John from the Wallner's Journey to Acceptance, an 8-part series of Alan and Rosemary Wallner and their 3 children on their journey to accept their daughter Alex as transgender. First, Alex needed to accept herself, and each conversation kind of built on the other. So by the end, you come to understand how Alex's announcement was a transformation that brought the Wallner family closer. So Rosie, Alan, and Alex participated in all 8 conversations, and John joined in on the 8th conversation when he was visiting from the United Kingdom, and he was the calming, insightful psychotherapist, nudging the Wallners to examine their inner selves and bring out their true selves during their individual journeys of acceptance. So the Wallners revolutionized their lives and their business, and I'll include the 8-part series for those of you who haven't, and also a refresher if you'd like to go back, in this episode's resource section of the show notes. I also wanted to mention that I have personal experience with John. We also have done a workshop together through WeMentor. We did a mini lab series. Remember that, John?
Yes. Wow. You put me on the spot with that, didn't you?
I know. Well, I totally, was looking through pictures for when we post them for this episode. And I was just remembering our presentation together.
Oh, it worked really well. We kind of have a synergy, don't we, Nancy?
Yeah, we do. And so you're talking to me from Oxfordshire, England. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sat in my chair looking out at the dark, going, when am I going to have my dinner?
Yeah, because we're taping here at noon and it's 6 o'clock there. So he's...
Oh, it's gone 7, Nancy.
Oh, it's gone to 7 now. Okay. We are moving along. So in our first conversation, our focus was on how to lead through the eyes of intrinsic self. And really, we started with the self and we started even backward further with John's life growing up. And you've had a very, very difficult life. I think I happen to know more of his backstory just because I've been working with him on his business. And he's also been very instrumental in helping me through 2020 with all the losses I was experiencing. And I was really concerned about not freezing in time during these different events that have occurred in our lives, but to grow through that time in that time. And I think that that's kind of the focus of today's conversation, is really how to move through traumatic experiences. Is that what you're coming to as well, John?
I don't know. Is that what I'm coming to? You said to me that this topic is on Brexit and coronavirus.
Well, it
I
is.
Hope that's what you're going to start talking about.
Well,
Yes. I know how you can go off to the side and lead me up the garden path. And I mean, they go, I haven't prepared for this.
No, I just think that that's the way to kind of ground the conversation, because globally, there's just a lot going on that we're all kind of experiencing with this COVID pandemic and how each democracy is kind of being, you know, handling it. And so I just think that your ways in which you look at the world and work with people on their energy level, it really, you know, we can add that in as we go along and talk about what's kind of going on around the world, because you've collected a lot of data. And I just want to say that John is an experienced life coach, meditation tutor, and holistic therapist. And you can go to the show notes bio to get more information about his backstory or background. So, yeah, there's a lot going on in your neck of the woods in the United Kingdom. Could you define a little bit about Brexit and tell us a little about what's going on there and the pandemic?
Okay, well, in the Brexit vote, which happened several years ago now, we were spun an awful lot of lies. We weren't given truth about what exactly would happen. It was kind of like, we will make Britain great again, just like you had, we will make the United States great again. And what has happened has reeled out just like what happened with President Trump. And it's a case of now it's happening. Nobody really knows what it all means. And it's all so mixed and muddled. Your customs are having a nightmare. And to get goods across to mainland Europe or get them back is taking so long now that actually goods are spoiling. Fish, meat, some even vegetables are spoiling by the time they're reaching the continent, because the paperwork and the custom stuff is so long and so much of it, and nobody really knows what they're doing, that it's a nightmare. So, I mean, at the beginning, Brexit was about the membership of being in the European bloc.
And there's how many states? Like 27 member states that were part of Brexit? I mean, part of the European
bloc.
Union.
Now you're asking, because, I mean, we've had members come in since. I mean, we've had Greece, and I think we've had Hungary as well. So I really can't remember. But I would say that the feeling for the European Union went down very much the year that we voted because of all the immigrants. And one of the big things that rocked Brexit was the fact that the European Union, i.e. Brussels, dictated to us how many immigrants we had to take in. Now, we're a very small country in comparison to a lot of the European countries, and we're also an island, and this was never featured either. So there was a lot of anger at this time, and this, I think, is one of the reasons why a lot of people voted Brexit. But I will talk a little bit about the pros and cons here that are there, and then talk about completely how it's affected us now. So one of the things was, it costs a lot of money to buy in to European bloc. And we've had the likes of Greece and the likes of Hungary that have come in recently in the last 5-10 years, and they're not having to pay the fee. Hang on a minute. Why are we paying a fee that's a very high fee, and some of these lesser countries are not paying a fee? Doesn't really seem fair. So the fee in 2016 was £13 billion.
Wow.
I mean, yes, we did receive back £4.5 billion of spending, which went on things like farmers or the fisheries, you know, grants, etc.
Yeah, it's hard for me to kind of put that into context because it's a big number. I don't know what's involved with it, but you're raising the point.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. So the UK's net contribution in 2016 was £8.5 billion. And the question was, does the free trade that we have with the European Union and the investment outweigh these costs? And this was a big consideration that we were all having. What do we get out of it for what we're paying into it, when actually we've got some countries that have just newly joined that are poverty stricken, that aren't actually paying the fee, and other countries that are not as prompt as maybe us and Germany and some of the northern Europeans, not paying it, Yeah. You look at some of the ways that the southern countries, they're a bit slack in the way they operate. They're not quite as rigid and as law abiding, shall we put it like that? So the other thing is that the pro-Europeans argue that the UK status as one of the world's biggest financial centres would be diminished. Our world banking is pretty high up there, just like yours are. And the City of London has long been seen as the gateway to the EU. So firms in the UK were worried about this. They worried about how our banking industry would go down, because our banking industry is one of our biggest assets. We've lost all our trade assets, so things like steel, chocolate, biscuits, car manufacturing, they've all gone now. We don't have that in the UK like we used to, that used to hold the UK afloat. Banking is. So this was the pro-agreement to actually stay in Europe. Another thing was sovereignty. So as you know, we have a queen and then the parliament. And what we wanted as Brexiteers, we wanted to own our country again. Why did we fight in World War II and win in order to have Brussels come in the back door and tell us what we could or could not do and how much we had to spend? Does that seem right? Does it seem right that our sea around our island, we can't own? That actually Europeans can come and steal our fish and we're given a quota of how much we can get and they don't have one? Is that fair? So that was about sovereignty. And it was also about involving giving up control over domestic affairs. Some of the European Union control our health and safety, control how we can do things or not do things, completely tie us up in knots sometimes with our industries. It's very hard.
And so that wasn't even... Go ahead.
The immigration I mentioned earlier, the EU law, it meant that anybody could come into UK from Europe, however many wanted to come. The positive side was UK people could go into Europe, but they never considered how small we are as an island. If you look at how many Polish people we have here, how many Romanian people we have here, how many Bulgarians we have here. Yes, we have a lot of French, we have a lot of Italians, we have a lot of Spanish, we have a lot of Germans. But what was happening is all these poorer European countries were coming over here, working like stink, and all credit to them, but they were sending all the money back to the poorer countries of the EU. So we never had the investment back into our country. They were coming for so many years and then going back with all our money taken out of the country. And when you've got so many people coming across with no cap, it was becoming harder and harder for us to keep our economy going in that way. So now let's look at national security. Open borders are great, but they're also not great. Think about how people could come across. We had a big bout of Islamic rebels coming and bombing London. So we have a sea around us. Why can't we utilise that sea to help us be secure? Because of being in the European Union and we have this free coming and going, we couldn't actually save ourselves from terrorist threat. And we had quite a few terrorist threats in London at that time and just after. That shouldn't be the case, surely. We should be able to control our shores. We're an island.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
So there's lots of things that were for and against Brexit. But the thing was, is we were not given the true picture of what would happen if we did pull out. And pulling out of the European bloc does give us more trade elsewhere, because there's restrictions on how we can trade out of the European bloc. So it means we can trade with China, we can trade more with you, we can trade more with Africa, because we're now not part of the bloc. But the thing is that our main trade does go backwards and forwards to Europe. And this wasn't said. What was said was that having a trade agreement in the European bloc like this would disable us from trading across the globe. They didn't say that actually most of our trade is with Europe anyway. So there was a lot of spiel put out there that wasn't fully understood. And if you think about how north of our country, the UK, is at the moment, it's in crisis. Because the north of our country was all about industry, machines and factories. And all of our industry has virtually died. The technology and the tourism is down in the south, not in the north. The banks are in the south. All the big business are in the south. They're not in the north. As you get to the Midlands and go up, it's not there. So we've got a lot of unemployment, a lot of very poverty-stricken families. And I'm not talking people that, you know, are dirty or, you know, have always been poverty. I'm talking middle-class families where maybe both parents have degrees. We're having to go and get food packages.
Since COVID hit. So you've got this unresolved mess with Brexit, and then COVID hits, and now you're really seeing how the European Union could have worked together to kind of get the pandemic under control. Or I was reading more about, you know, if we talk about leadership, just the stories that were coming out were these truckers that, you know, had this huge backup on one of your, you know, one of the main freeways there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, our country was poor anyway, with middle-class people asking for food donations and food packages. I mean, this has been ongoing now for over 10 years where you will donate food that you buy at a supermarket into a trolley to go to people who can't afford to eat, to go to food banks. And this has been happening for a long time now. So now when we've got COVID, it's even worse. And I'll just say that our unemployment figures went up drastically during COVID. So they increased from August to October, they increased by 49%. Before that, they had the highest jobless rate since 2016, January to August, was an increase of 48%. So this is taken from tradingeconomics.com. And it's like staggering how many people are out of work even before COVID, you know? So now COVID's hit, it's even harder. And you were saying about the truckers. Well, I couldn't believe it. So basically, they find a new strain of COVID in the UK. But they weren't telling the truth. They found a new strain of COVID in South Africa. They found that the strain in the UK was also already in Europe, actually in Germany. They found that the strain of that was from the UK was also in France. So what the media did was they highlighted that it was only in the UK. So then the countries went, ha ha, well, we'll show you if you want to leave us and go into Brexit. We'll show you the score. And this was before we actually got the Brexit deal. So France just turned around and said, right, because you've got a new strain in the UK, we're shutting all our borders. No UK transportation exports are coming in. And not just did France do that, so did Germany. So it meant our major exports to these two countries, and we export a lot to these countries, and we have to go through France most of the time to get to the continent, everything stopped. So it was complete and utterly tactical, in my opinion, of why they did it. It was to show us before we made a Brexit deal with the European Union that this is what is going to happen, and we have power over you. And what happened is that we had tailbacks of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of lorries, nose to tail, all the way along our motorway, which is what you call a freeway, along the M20. I've never seen anything like it on the news before. The problem is that people don't understand how truckers live and how they work. Oh, they all have toilets in their cab. They all have water. They all have food. Do they? Really? No, they don't. So these truckers were left just before Christmas, when they were all hoping to get home for Christmas. Polish drivers, you know, German drivers, Estonian drivers, all kinds of drivers that were trying to get back home, left on this motorway with nothing. Mm-hmm. And this is the bit that the news didn't broadcast. You know, you've got drivers here that need the toilet. You've got drivers here that haven't got water. And all that was reported was there were scuffles with police. Well, I'm not surprised. Would you scuffle with the police if you'd been days without toilet, without sanitation, anywhere to have a wash? I'm hoping that they used some of the hard shoulder to actually get food down there and water, but I don't know. And these people, these lorry drivers, you know, who was thinking about them? It was all politics. It was all about, we'll show the British before Brexit happens. Because, of course, Brexit happened in January.
Yeah, just sounds very dire. Yeah, like you were talking about some of the cargo of fish not being able to get to their destination. And it's also affecting the small business owners. Because if there's holdups at each port, then the small businesses who have had small trucking arrangements, agreements with these larger companies, they're not using the smaller companies because it costs too much paperwork.
Yeah, and too much time. But also it means that they can't possibly get the compensation they might get otherwise, you know. And to lose whole lorries of fish or whole lorries of meat, and we export most of our meat and fish to Europe, you know. It's really funny. I mean, we farm a lot of lamb, but actually all our lamb goes to the continent. We get our lamb when we want to eat lamb from New Zealand. It's absolutely crazy because the price of Welsh and British lamb is too much in comparison to the price of New Zealand lamb. I mean, how do you figure that one out? It's nuts. But, you know, it really has impacted a lot of businesses. And I do know a lot of people around Europe. So I've got some examples of how different businesses and what different towns look like across Europe and the UK.
Yeah, we're curious.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much you know about what's happened in Europe, but Spain and Italy had a really bad time with the first lockdown. Italy's figures were going up and up and up and up. And then what happened with Spain is all the people that lived in Madrid and Barcelona decided when the lockdown came that they'd all go to their holiday homes on the coast. So where the coast hadn't been infected with COVID, all of a sudden it was. This caused an awful lot spread, widespread of COVID. So both these countries imposed a lockdown. Now, Spain is a very cafe-orientated society. So they will get up in the morning and they will go out for coffee and they will talk to their neighbours, they will talk to different business people, they will have a cake and just sit and chat in the sunshine. And they'll do that for several hours. That's part of their culture, that's part of how they mix. To have restrictions so you can't go out, that means that there's no coffee shops, nothing's open except supermarkets, the churches aren't even open. Lots of Spain relies on pilgrims, relies on the religious aspect of people coming. They are a very religious, very Catholic society, was really bad. The police were patrolling around the streets and they were giving you on-the-spot fines if you were out. They were actually asking you, have you got permission to go out? Where is your certificate to say you can come out today? It was as bad as that. People were having to get certificates to say that they're allowed to go out shopping on this day. And the curfew was really early. So that, how is that for a very communal society that spends most of their time out on the streets, talking to others, going to bars, going to coffee shops, mingling, socializing around churches, all kinds of things? I mean, that's sort of like, wow. Well, you look at Italy. Italy has a similar kind of cafe kind of society. They also come out quite late at night. They're drinking and dinners really, really late. And they got given a curfew of 6 p.m. Well, 6 p.m. is just when people start coming out shopping and doing their shopping and having their beers and talking in cafes and going to restaurants and having dinners. Italians eat incredibly late because they get up early and then they will have a siesta for about 3-4 hours in the middle of the afternoon. So it means they start back at work about 5 or 6. You know, wow. I mean, that's unbelievable. So in Italy, I have somebody that works at a brewery, and I was talking to him and he says that he has one of these mini breweries, like craft brewery. And he said the industry is losing between 50 and 70% of its turnover. And he says the problem is because there is no planning. People aren't telling them exactly when the restrictions are going to stop. And they need 60 to 90 days to be ready and actually brew the beer. So the uncertainty means that the sector cannot give a date for when they can do the beer. And because of the regulations of who can work next to each other and how, a lot of people have said, well, I'll shut the brewery down because it was more beneficial to actually discard it and stop it than it was to actually try and keep it working with the employers and all the rest of it. So if you were lucky enough to find another job, wow. But a lot of these businesses are having a nightmare. Well, the guy that does the brewery, he lives in Venice, and I've been to Venice many times, and I don't know if you know, but it's a city full of canals. There aren't roads. There's narrow streets, and you get places by canals. Well, I don't know if you remember, but at the beginning of 2020, there was a lot of flooding in Venice, and they had a bad publicity anyway then because of the flooding. And I know how it floods. My sister lived in Venice a few years, and she phoned me one day and said, I can see a wardrobe floating down in front of my door. And it wasn't about waders to get through it. You needed spats right up to your shoulders to actually wade and get out of your front door. So a flood in Venice is a serious flood.
Yeah.
So they had that first at the beginning of 2020, which was bad publicity. And now they have this with COVID. Well, Venice relies on tourism. That's their main form of income, is tourism. Mm. So now you haven't got the coffee shops, you haven't got the bars, you haven't got the tourism. What else, you know, do you have in Venice? Well, not much. So how do the Venetians support themselves? Because all the galleries have closed, or the churches have closed. And that's what's in Venice. Venice is all about old history, art, you know, cafe, restaurants, culture, history.
Yeah.
So they haven't got much. And my friend was saying he's lucky enough to actually find a job on the mainland doing some driving. But his brewery, he doesn't know if it's going to survive after COVID.
Yeah.
He didn't have an online service he has now, but he can only export locally to his country. And I keep saying to him, if you could actually make that exporting further, there are communities of Italians all over the world, and I'm sure they would want to actually support you and buy your beer. But he says he just hasn't the capacity to make it and brew it and export it like he needs to because of all the restrictions. So now let's look at Germany. So Germany is one of these places that we all think, oh, yes, they'll have it nailed. They are so structured. They're so organized. They're so to the time. Everybody thinks it's Germany like that. I've never seen so much chaos because of COVID in my life with Germany. And I was talking to somebody that lives in Brunswick, and that's between Hanover and Berlin. So it's sort of like in the middle, Lower Saxony. And she was saying that it looks like a ghost town. When she goes out shopping, they're in lockdown, full lockdown like we are. They actually had more rules issued on Tuesday, which are heavy rules. She was saying that they used to have 7 department stores, one of which was 7 floors high. 5 of those have closed permanently. She said they used to have a street that was cafes all the way along. And she said some of them have managed to do online selling, you know, takeout, you ring up or you type it in on the internet, you're given a time to collect it, you come and collect it.
Yeah.
But she said some of them haven't. There's gaps all the way up the street. She said the problem was that Germany wasn't ready for online marketing, for click and collect.
Oh.
And so all these big department stores could do that sell clothes, etc., and goods and underwear and whatever, all they could do was put in their windows saying, if you see anything you want, please give us a call. And Amazon has really, really, really taken over. Everybody's gone to Amazon. Everything's delivered to Amazon. And since we've had the last lockdown, you would not imagine what's happened to the postal service in Germany. You cannot get a parcel into Germany and you cannot get a parcel out of Germany from the UK. Even after filling in all the customs leaflets, it's incredibly difficult. And the backlog that's in some of the postal, they operate for DHL in Germany, is unbelievable. It's taking 8 weeks or more just to get a parcel. And I tried to send a letter there at the beginning of January. It's still not there.
Boy. Yeah, when the postal service is affected to that degree, it's very concerning because you can't even get mail out to other people.
Yeah,
that you love and so doing business. I mean, how do you ship your packages to your clients?
Well, they're just getting lost.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you some statistics of the COVID across some of the places I've been talking to. So these statistics come from worldometer.info. And these statistics about the deaths and the new number of people with the virus. So these were taken from Wednesday the 20th, and I've purposely taken midweek because you find towards the end of the week and after the weekend, the statistics are gathered quite as well. You'll get a slump and then suddenly you get a massive boost again on Tuesday. So the new people that are contracting it in the US, so we'll do comparison against the US, on the 20th of January, which was Wednesday, was 188,520. And the deaths were more than 4,385. So that's your country, that's the US. So second,
we just hit 400, over 400,000.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, this is daily, okay? So the UK is next. So the number of new cases in the UK on Wednesday were 38,905. The number of deaths was 1,820. On the same day, Italy's new cases were 13,571, with a number of deaths 524. In Spain, the new cases on Wednesday were 41,571, with the number of deaths 464. In Germany on Wednesday, which is the 20th, the number of new cases were 18,559, with the number of deaths 1,052. So it gives you some insight. These statistics are variable because some countries don't get right statistics. I know our country's not great. You know, I've had COVID or what I believe to be COVID, and I didn't report it to the statistics. I just dealt with it. So there are cases that are confirmed and some that aren't confirmed. There are some deaths that aren't confirmed that are COVID related to, which are. So it's very, very variable.
Yeah. How is the government responding? What kinds of help are you getting? And is there help for small business?
In the UK at the moment, there's a furlough scheme that will last until March, which actually means that you can close your business and your employers and yourself will get a government grant to cover your losses at that period, but only a percentage of your losses. So it kind of keeps businesses in kind of a lull state. Okay, this was around the first lockdown. Didn't happen in the second lockdown, but has happened in our third lockdown. So the UK is in the third lockdown now. So our lockdown started. We had a lockdown October and November. We were hoping this would mean we wouldn't have to have a lockdown over Christmas, but we had a lot of new cases. So we went again into lockdown in December, just before Christmas. The Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, did say that we would have a respite over the Christmas period where people could see each other. But then he had to go back on his word and have a further harsh lockdown. So we're in a state now where we have had no cinema, no theatre, no concerts and no art galleries since March. OK, so none of the arts since March. We have had our shops open, all shops open in the interim between the lockdowns, and businesses working where they can from home, but if they can't, you're allowed to go to work. Now it's a case that we've had a stronger lockdown from the first one. You have to wear masks when you're outside. You have to wear masks when you're inside a store. Only our supermarkets are open, or corner shops that sell food, or pharmacies, or a post office. Nothing else is open, okay? And we also have a 5-mile distance that we can travel out of our town. So this is suggested, it's not law, but if you go 5 miles out of your town, then it's suggested that you have no reason for travel and you shouldn't be traveling, and you could potentially get an on-the-spot fine from the police if you're caught. Any travel that you do, you have to justify why you're doing the travel, and it is asked that you stay at home. Only key workers, which are people that work in grocery stores, supermarkets, people that work in primary schools, or people that work in nurseries are allowed out, or people that are in the healthcare sector, that is care homes and nurses in hospitals, etc., and GPs. The rest of you are expected to stay home, to work from home, and not go out. So it's a bit harsh at the moment. It's causing an awful lot of depression.
And how is it affecting your practice?
You would have thought that I would have a glut of people coming to me. But the problem is that while people are having problems with their mental health, they can't afford to pay for it. And they don't know where to go to get any help for it.
Okay.
So my next thing is to actually advertise for people in across the world to pay what you can afford, because I think it's vital that people get the help.
And they get it consistently, because this is so intense that having regular sessions really helps with stabilizing, knowing that every week or every other week you have someone to talk with about what you're going through, so you can stay more in the present moment and process all these different pieces. So how are you being inspired, and how are you utilizing your entrepreneurial spirit to kind of reach out into different places?
Well, I think what's happened with the coronavirus is people are coming together so much more as a community. Coronavirus isn't just negative. Let's just say this. There is a positive element to it. Unfortunately, the news, the way it's broadcast, it's all negative. It makes you just downright depressed and wonder whether you want to live. But there is a good side to coronavirus. For the start, everybody in every country has it. It's a pandemic. So everybody can feel united in this, that this is a global thing that's happening. And I'm finding that local communities are pulling together. If they know somebody has got COVID or is alone and can't get out, or they're vulnerable, like an old person living on their own, the community are pulling together and looking after them, saying, is there anything you need? Can I get you any shopping? What do you need me to do to help you? So there's schemes like that going on that are pulling community together. I'm finding a lot of people, when they do go out shopping, they will window shop as well, because they're looking at things that were, that aren't, and they're wishing, you know, oh, I remember when, which means that me putting a note in a window to say, do you need any help? I am here, la, 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 is actually a nice way now for people to feel that they're supported. So this is a new way of advertising, of marketing, of getting into the community around here, which I'm doing. And when I'm talking to people in the street, I'm talking to people in supermarkets, I'm saying, this is what I do. I say, do you need any help? I can help you. I'm not asking for a fortune. Pay me what you think you can afford. There is help here. There is people around that really care. You're not isolated. You're not on your own. This is something that we all work on together. And I think that's the way to go forwards with it. One of the positive things I've seen around the coronavirus is there's so many people going out walking, and walking as families, and going out cycling.
Yeah, I'm seeing that here too.
We have a lot of national countryside trails, the Thames River Trail, the Ridgeway, all kinds of trails across the UK. And everybody's going out and using them. And it's amazing to see so many people out and seeing families in their bubble going out together. When we had the break between the two lockdowns, where we could use restaurants, people were taking that opportunity to go out together as families and enjoy themselves as families. They were talking together as families. Pre-lockdown, I was witnessing whole families coming together at dinner, and every single one of them had an iPad or a tablet or a phone or a computer. Each one of them at the dinner table was focused so much on their technology and in themselves that none of them spoke the whole meal. It's like, why are you coming out for a dinner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it really has done some good and brought people together. And I know things are hard, but what I'm trying to do with the community, with people I talk to, even if I'm not getting paid, is smile at them when you pass someone. Say good day to them. Say, how are you doing? Talk to the people that you're there in the shopping queue. Talk to people that are the till and the checkout. Give your love always.
Yeah.
And give it for free too, you know, say, can I help you? And when I'm working as a therapist with people, yeah, it's not always good to say I'm free because people take you for granted, but to say I'm here and I understand the situation, what do you think you can pay me? And to say I want to help you and let's look at coronavirus in a positive way. Let's look at seeing what opportunities it's bringing forth, not what it's taking away. And it's all about changing the mindset from something that is portrayed as awful to something that actually can be seen as an opportunity.
Yeah, excellent advice. And it also is really good to inspiration to see that it comes down to your local community and trying to connect with your local community, along with you're also doing global stuff with people around the world. And there's a way that we can unify. And so that's all really, really good stuff. So in the direness, there's this silver lining that we need to keep enlarging each day in our communications with each other. And I was noticing too that with the masks, people aren't utilizing eye contact. It's almost like they're looking down all the time. So it's taking an extra effort. Or people saying, you know, oh, it's you. I didn't even, you know, recognize you with the mask on. And so it's like, well, you know, they are looking up. So we have to look at people and look for the differences, but really notice people more of, yeah, you know, their eyes and their hair color and, you know, maybe even the color of their masks and, you know, how clever they are. You know, there's so much creativity that we're starting to see as a result of all this.
Well, I think that just proves really, Nancy, that how much body language is important to how we read people. And if you can't see their nose and mouth, it sometimes feels a bit threatening because just looking at eyes, you know, if you think of somebody robbing a bank with a balaclava on, it's quite intimidating. And when you just see the eyes, you know, you don't know who they are, what their body language is, if they're smiling, if they're not, you can't really assess the mood so clearly. And this is why body language is a higher percentage than actual vocal communication. But what I will say is look at the eyes and look at the bit in the corner of the eyes and the edge near the ears. You can actually see a smile by looking at that bit. When it moves up and the cheeks move up, the person's smiling. So next time you see somebody in a mask, look at that bit on the eyes and see that they're smiling. Because a lot of people are smiling. It's just difficult to recognize.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Is there anything else you would like to share? I wanted to bring in your perspective of what's going on in the United Kingdom and surrounding area and with Brexit, because it was going to be hard enough separating out the European Union before COVID and then new leadership and everything. And so with Boris Johnson in office. So anyways, I just felt it was important. You and I have had many conversations and it has gotten really dire in your area and surrounding the European Union in general with the COVID pandemic. And so I wanted to kind of give a perspective of where we're at and like you're talking about too, where you're at, where the other countries are that you've been looking at and noticing and how business owners are doing. And then also, you know, what are some of the ways in which people can move forward through this so that they don't get stuck frozen at this particular time of trauma?
Right. Okay. So first of all, I would say that actually the UK isn't noticing Brexit that much. The everyday person, the businesses are noting Brexit because of customs controls and how long it takes to go across to mainland Europe. We are noticing it a bit, the everyday person with the postal service. At the moment, we haven't run out of fruit and veg. We get a lot of our green veg, broccoli, etc., like that, from Europe, because in Britain at this time of year when it's cold, it's the root vegetables, turnip, swede, parsnip, are our potatoes that are our main crop. At the moment, it hasn't affected this. I'm expecting it to affect our more exotic fruit and veg that has to come from the continent. But we will see. When the COVID lockdown starts, finishes, and we start going back to normal living, hopefully, then I think we're going to notice more about Brexit. But We don't know when we're going to come out of lockdown. So whereas other countries in Europe have been given a date, we have been told that it might be until March. So we don't have any clue. While a lot of people are criticising Boris for his lack of jumping in and making a decision about lockdowns, he has certainly acted a lot faster than some of the European Union countries. And as far as the vaccine is concerned, I have to say this because it's Oxford. Oxford has actually developed its own vaccine. And this has been brilliant. So not only are we buying in vaccines, but Oxford has developed its own vaccine, which is coming through very quickly to Oxfordshire and southern counties at the moment. And I do believe that we're on target to meet what Boris Johnson said was an incredible target, and he hoped to meet it. But I think we're on target to meet the vaccines and have everybody 15 million vaccinated by the 15th of February. We've already vaccinated 3.8 million care homes and over 80s, and we're on the second phase now of vaccinating over 70s. And actually, I was called the other day as a key worker to be vaccinated, but I don't work in a care home anymore, so I had to say no, I don't. So on the next tier down. So it's incredible what the government is putting in place and how the UK is coping with it. And despite it looking bleak, I think we're on a much better level than the European Union at the moment, because they went through months of deliberation and having extra tests on the vaccine to meet European Union legislation. So I think that's a very positive thing, really. Looking at the countries, looking at how we all are, I really think unity and coming together, talking about the situation, but not dwelling on the negative aspect, is something we need to do. I think if you look at life as a flowing river and, you know, not holding on to the banks of the river, the old way of thinking, the old way of doing, but actually casting yourself off into the middle of the river, into the main flow, meeting people that are also willing to move forwards to a new way of thinking, to a new way of being, and feel that flow. See, hear, feel, and be in the moment as you move forwards on the journey. COVID is giving you the opportunity to change, giving you the opportunity to move forwards and see, feel, hear what possibly you didn't do before, because you were locked down in a pattern of behaviour, in a pattern of routine that you'd always done. So this gives you the opportunity to break those patterns, to look at life different, to embrace a flow that maybe you couldn't have done before. So look at life in a new way. Embrace it in a new way, and don't be afraid of the change.
And so if you can stay in the middle of the river and look at the banks as, you know, one side's chaos, one side's rigidity, that, you know, it's like you don't want to get stuck in, yeah, or, you know, like glob onto a lot of chaos to create it bigger in your life. And you don't want to become so rigid and stuck. But if you can, like you're saying, stay in the middle of the river, that can help you with flowing and being open to the next part of what you need to be doing right now.
Doing in your life, yes. Mm. And it means that you're more mindful of yourself, of others, of communities, of countries, of states, of actually just your role in life, of just being.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic advice. And I think that, you know, I keep working on it every day, right? And staying in the flow. And this is a great opportunity to really get to know ourselves on a much more deeper level, because we're, we're in positions where, you know, we're exploited more, you know, like there's a lot of emotion around everything that we're doing. And so if we can calm ourselves down a lot and use that time to kind of integrate, yeah, and make sense of what we're experiencing in the now, will help us move through to the next part of,
yeah,
what we're doing.
So what I'd like to do, Nancy, is just end on a quote from Pema Chodron. She's written a couple of really good books. And what she says here is, she said, "We can use this opportunity to start waking up. if we do decide to start surrendering to our uncontrollable situation and letting go of resistance and resentment, we will have no shortage of opportunities to learn and grow. Our world will become our greatest teacher and ally.
Oh, that's a beautiful way to end. Well, thank you so much, John, for being our guiding light during these last two conversations. And they will linger in our minds for a long time and in our hearts. And you've got to exercise a meditation that in our last conversation that people can use over and over again. So thank you so much. And my heart is with you as we journey forward. Thanks, everybody,
for tuning in. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you for having me.
Okay, excellent. And thank you for tuning in. And thanks, mon frère de notre mère, my brother from another mother, Mike Avea. Okay, we'll see you all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our We Mentor Self-Leadership community. You can subscribe for free through wementor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in these all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a We Mentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in We Mentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out wementor.com. You can email me, Nancy, at wementor.com or call me 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening and we'll see you next week.